Super excited to be here tonight. Thank you for being here. There are a lot of people in this place tonight that I just feel very close to, very warm, affectionate feelings towards. I wanna recognize that we have some visitors from My Near Christian Church. It's a church that my wife and I went to when we first moved here. My Near is a little bit out of town, and maybe a lot out of town, and we've ended up moving back here to town to go to church. But just dear, dear, wonderful people, and they support this place. These people actually contribute to make sure that this thing can happen. And so if you see somebody here of a slightly different age bracket, make sure you tell them thank you for their support and for their encouragement. And you know, they're here. This is your prime time, it's not theirs. And they're here because they love this ministry and want to see what's going on. So thank you to them for being here. Again, I can't help it but say my two cents too about Phil Tatum, who's here. You might not know this, I'm on the steering committee for Global Scope, and so there's a lot of ministries that you're going to see throughout the course of the year where they're going to come in and show videos, and all of them, I'm sure, have incredibly good sides to them. I just happen to be pretty close to this, and pretty humbling to see and to know that our ministries, even in the Philippines, we have three campus ministries in the Philippines under our umbrella here at Encounter, and we have a person named Mark and Princess who came from, yeah, Princess, that's an awesome name, they came from their ministry and are now campus ministers in Thailand through Global Scope. And so our campus ministry, if we want to get competitive here, okay, our ministries in the Philippines are outdoing us in international campus ministry. So let's do it. Love to have you chat with Phil. He'll be here all day tomorrow too, so there'll be opportunity for you to chat with him. So if you're new here tonight, this offering time, it's not for you. Okay, you just let this thing pass and don't feel any guilt about that. But if you are somebody that knows that this is your home, these KFC buckets that we're going to pass right now, the proceeds to that are going directly to those three ministries that I just talked about in the Philippines. And incredible things have happened there in the last year. Between those three ministries and ours, in 1 year's time, there's been 90 students baptized. Isn't that amazing? So, yeah, that's awesome. Tonight, we're in a series. Does anyone know the name of our series? Do you remember it from last week? Somebody was here. Great. Thanks for all three of you that listened. Intentional. And we are trying to understand what it's like to live a life of intentionality that Jesus called discipleship. That we are going to be investing in other people in a way that is not by accident, but that is intentionally into their lives. And we thought that it would be best if we didn't just talk about this hypothetically, but that we would invite some different people from your pews, your seats, to come up, to sit here, and to get to know. Last week, we got to know Jen, and she sat here, and she's only been in our ministry for a few months, and she talked about how she was loved into this place, and she talked about the intentionality that really helped and affected her. And we talked about us being just like Jesus and picking names. Jesus has always been into names. He's never been into programs. And we want to be like Jesus in that way. And so we all got an idea of this, man, maybe it would be worth our time to just even focus on a couple of names this semester that we can really intentionally love on and invest in. One other name that I would like to bring up for this week is Danielle. And so Danielle, wherever you're at, come on up and I'll have you sit. You're coming that way? We're going to switch things up. I'll have you sit on this side. Are you excited to get to know Danielle? Okay. Danielle, tell me a little bit. By the way, I'm so glad you're here. This is good. Yeah. These girls, I know that speaking in front of people isn't exactly the most comfortable thing for everybody, and I understand that. I can totally get that. But Danielle, I want to start by talking just a little bit about your family, your upbringing, and what was life like for you as a young child?
Okay. slipped up.
Is it good?
Is it on?
Okay,
now?
Sorry, guys. I grew up in a family. I am the middle child, and I have an older sister and a younger sister. And my family, it was just kind of hard growing up for me. I love my parents, don't get me wrong, but it was kind of one of those households where you had to earn your love, and that meant I needed to do well in school or needed to be better than my sister at sports or better than her in the way that I looked or any of those things. It just wasn't prime. Like, I didn't feel loved in my household. There were days I thought my mom hated me, and that's really hard to do. And so I was just always trying to win her affection or win my dad's affection, or even my sister sometimes just wanted to be important in people's lives.
And so how did that affect school?
It really affected school in regards to how hard I pushed myself. I got stressed out all the time, and I needed to have straight A's because that was the way that in my house I was loved. My sister was better at sports than me, but I was the one who pulled straight A's, and that was because I worked really hard. So I was a smart sister, and every time a good report card would come home, my mom would praise me and tell me that she loved me, and so that's how school really was affected by that.
Okay. Did you end up finding more attention or focus towards other relationships during that time as well?
Absolutely. I was one of those people that just searched for love. So for me, that happened to be through boys. And that started really young. I wanted to have my first boyfriend in like third grade. And just like, not that that actually happened, but I was constantly thinking about guys and who could be my boyfriend and just daydreaming and writing in my diary and all of those silly things. But it was because I couldn't find anyone to love me. And so I just kept searching and searching and searching.
And then you were talking the other day, and you were saying that you did end up getting, once you did get a boyfriend, it was kind of a series, right?
Yeah.
It's like one after the other, and
yeah,
kind of always having a boyfriend. Did going to college just make all that better?
Absolutely not. college actually made things a lot worse. There was no structure anymore. There was no one telling me I couldn't do anything, and I really fell into bad habits, and there were still boys, of course, because that was the way I felt loved, so constant boys in my life, some that I was dating and some that I wasn't, and alcohol came into play too, and it all is just like tied together, like everything, for me at least, was tied together, every bad choice I made.
What process did you... Because I can remember. I remember you being here, all right? And it's like you were in this ministry, and you still didn't really seem to have that spark that I see now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, something seemed to have happened in that process with you. Can you explain how that spark came or how that changed for you?
It really changed when I signed up to go on my mission trip 2 years ago. It's been... a summer ago, something like that. And I just felt like the Lord was telling me I needed to go. It was a spur-of-the-moment decision. And I think I was actually the first person to sign up because the Holy Spirit just planned that all out perfectly, and I had the $50 cash in my wallet because it was my birthday weekend. And I got to the campus house the Saturday that we left, and there was just something different about everyone that was there. I didn't know anyone at all, and they were all just like welcoming and loving and kind, and they just wanted to get to know me, and the whole week was just like that. There's just this aura about people on that trip, and they just loved me, and they loved each other well, and it wasn't about who we were or who I was at the time, or who they were once upon a time. It was who we were going to be, and it was who God had called us to be that week, and what we were going to do for his kingdom, and it was just absolutely beautiful, and I made friendships that will be forever friendships, and that's because people cared, and they loved me, and I just felt like for once in my life, they didn't need anything from me, or I didn't need anything from them, but they weren't, like, searching or there wasn't something I had to give them to get their love. They just loved me because they loved the Lord. And it was just a wonderful week.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool. You explained to me, too, the other day that there was somebody that, like, went out of their way to, like, intentionally seek you out and to, like, encourage you or something like that. Can you explain that?
When we got back, it was the summertime, so it was hard to keep in contact, but Amber was one of the girls on the trip, and she doesn't go to school here anymore, but she called me up and met with me in my apartment and was continually texting me all summer. But the moment that I, like, felt that this had to be the place I invested in and that I wanted to get to know the Lord better was when we were sitting in my apartment, and I was crying because my summer hadn't gone the way I'd hoped it would after coming home from the trip, and it was still hard to, like, choose to follow the Lord. Like, my life was still not perfect, and I had been super upset because I just couldn't get it right, and I felt like it was going to take me years and years and years to get to where she was and to where the rest of the amazing people I met were. They were so in love with the Lord, and there was this aura about them, and I thought it would take me too long to get there, and I wasn't sure I wanted to be willing to do it. And she looked at me, and she told me to stop. Like, no other word. She goes, just stop. And I was confused. And then she told me that it doesn't take years or months or even days if you don't want it to. Like, if you just let the Lord work in you, he will. And he did. The Holy Spirit moved huge ways in my life last year, and I feel like an entirely new person, and that's all for the glory of the Lord.
And I can tell, and I can see it, and I know I've talked to a lot of other people too, and it's just something that we can see in you too, and it's exciting. It's wonderful to see. If you have any words of advice, last thing, any advice that you would want to just throw out, now's your chance. You're right here. You got a microphone in your hands.
My words of advice would be for everyone that's new here or has been coming for a while and never got invested in this community, people are going to be intentional with you because they love you. But if you're not intentional back, then you're not going to make the relationships that you want to have. And even from there, like, someone invested in me, and so in turn, I want to invest in someone else. And I hope that everyone feels that way and that we all get a chance to love on each other and invest in each other. And you don't have to have been here for a year or 2 years to be the one investing. You can start investing today in the people around you, no matter how long you've been here.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Daniel. That was awesome.
I might just sit down. It just feels kind of good to sit, you know? I just love listening to stories. I love listening to people's hearts. I love hearing how her perception of things was, like the reality, I guess the reality of the perception of things. Because I just hear about things, and so do you, but sometimes to just actually hear somebody talk like this gives us a real inside look and perspective into what God does and how he works. We want to talk about really being the hands, the feet of Jesus this year. And so much is going on that is so good. There's so many great stories that we can capitalize on and we can talk about. But I think that sometimes we're limited in just thinking it's just a select few. And my hope and my prayer is that it would just be something we all own, that Jesus becomes really real in transforming us into disciple makers. You heard Danielle use the word aura. It was a word we were tossing around earlier, and it's a word that it really does seem to describe what you just feel off of somebody. And you know what I'm talking about. I think maybe a better word would be permeate. You know that when light shines through a window, it just permeates every crevice, every place, every pore. It just pours through. It just shines through. It's just permeating. There is something that permeates off of people, and you know some of those people, and some of those people, the thing that permeates off of them is depression. You just meet that person, and they are sad. I just feel it. They may have smiled, but you can feel, can't you? You can just feel the depression. Some people, it's anger. They are just pissed off. I mean, they are just people that you're just like, man, that guy is just, mm-mm. And you can just feel it. And for some people, it's love. And what is it that permeates off of you? That's what I want to talk about tonight. We really want to talk tonight about being intentional with love. That people around us would feel love, would experience love, would have that permeating from their life into ours, into theirs, into whoever's. But as I got to thinking about this today, like, as I've been prepping this week, it would be really empty of me to try to describe to you how to talk love. This is what you should say. If you just say these magic words, you know, you can say those things. You say loving things, people are going to think you're nice. Well, that's because, Pete, we got to do something that's going to be like work. Like, you got to do something. You got to, yeah, I would agree. That helps. And, you know, words aren't bad either, but doing things for people seems like that might be a step up. But even if you are a loving person, a service kind of person, oftentimes it's just read as respectful. I respect that person. They work hard. They serve people. I respect them. This person over here is nice. This over here is respectful, but there are some people that they might even go as far as to say they're the real deal. And that's when something permeates off of them. And I really want to talk about that tonight. I have three friends from college. I have more than that, but you'll, for lack of a better term, we'll just go on. Dave is currently a very very successful man in the business world, and Dave is seeking at this point in his life, how can I translate success in the world into maybe being a little bit more intentional and a little bit more significant for the rest of my life? He's looking for significance. TJ, do you notice how I'm using names? That's what we do here, right? TJ. TJ, I haven't really been in much contact with him. I don't know for sure how he's doing. I've heard whispers of the fact that maybe his marriage isn't exactly as strong as it could be. Kurt, who we got the first one? Dave, you guys are good. Who's my second? TJ. And Kurt. Kurt and I, we were tight. Kurt was the best basketball player I ever saw. We played on the same basketball team, and I told you before, Great Lakes Christian College is like one step above girls' eighth grade. but we were pretty good. We were what Ben would call big fish in a small pond, okay? And I averaged 18 points a game. Not bad, right? It's respectable. Kurt Brown averaged 32 points a game. He was a superstar. He was amazing. He was awesome. And we ended up bonding a lot and played a lot of years together and had a good time. And then he ended up transferring to Michigan State. And then I went on to prepare myself for the ministry. Kurt went on and he ended up finding another group of friends, a bigger group of friends at Michigan State that, let's just say, they weren't preparing for ministry. You know who I'm talking about. And this group and this crowd were really tight, went to a lot of parties together. And Kurt met this girl, and he asked me if I'd marry him, and I did the wedding. And Kurt just went through a divorce. He's going through a divorce right now. These are my three friends. I think that Kurt was very scared of me about 3 months ago because I did his wedding. And I think that Kurt was afraid to meet with me because he was afraid of what was going to permeate off of me. Oh, he knew I'd be like, oh, it's okay. Oh, I don't judge you. But there's a lot of people that say nice things. I think he was afraid of what was going to come off of me, and he didn't want to be in the room when he found it. And so Kurt stood me up about 3 months ago. He didn't want to meet with me. We got a story we're going to look at tonight that is all about this. We are taking a look at Jesus' life in a very deeper and, I think, intentional way. And we're going to look here at how Jesus interacted with people and what was permeating off of him. So let's take a look. It's one of my favorite stories. It's awesome. I say that about every week, don't I? When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and he reclined at the table. Let's stop there for just a second. We learned last week that when Matthew, who was a tax collector and a sinner, ended up inviting Jesus to his house with other tax collectors and sinners, Jesus was eating with them. And when he ate with them, it was as if it was a signal or a status symbol that says, these are my people. And just so you know, Jesus really is about making everybody and anybody his people if they want to. And so the Pharisee, the people that are like all into the church thing and they're all into the rules and the thing that he seems, the only people that Jesus ever got mad at were Pharisees. Even when a Pharisee invites Jesus over to his house, he goes. He hangs out with him and reclines at the table. Do you guys know that in those days you ate kind of like lying down? I don't know. I'd like to demonstrate for you, but I'm afraid you'd be a little bit frustrated with me. But he'd lie down on his side, and they would eat and talk, and everyone would kind of like focus into the center. And in the center of this table on the floor would be the food. And so this is what they did. It says a woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, and so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume, very expensive. And as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Let's just put ourselves here a little bit. We don't know a lot about the story. And I don't know, maybe there's details. Obviously, there's details that we don't know about. But from what we see right here, this looks incredibly awkward. Doesn't it? I mean, you're at a Pharisee's house, you're lying down, and some woman who sleeps around town and has got the bad reputation, she comes in behind Jesus and starts like crying and weeping at his feet. And Jesus is like, yes, continue on, Pharisee, let's talk. And there's this activity of pouring perfume and tears and wiping it with her hair. And never mind, she's just back behind me doing, this is every bit awkward, right? And there's something going on here that is deep and to the point. And Jesus he capitalizes on it in an awesome way. Let's keep going. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who was touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. And Jesus answered him, Simon. He knows his name. He mentions his name. Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher. You know, before we go to the next, don't you always love it whenever God says, I've got something to say, or when Jesus says, I got something to tell you? Man, you want your ears tuned, okay? So let's just tune them right in. This is Jesus. He's like, I got something to say. He says, tell me, teacher. Jesus says, two people owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, and so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which one will love him more? And Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. It's not too hard to figure that out, is it? Let's just throw denarii out. Let's just go $500. And let's see, that's not a lot of money to you in this room. It's probably a lot. $500. You owe $500. Or you owe 50. Man, if you're forgiven that, there is incredible gratitude, right? Let's up it a little bit. $500,000. What if you owed $500,000 and you got that credit card bill taken care of? Would you just not be incredibly elated to the point of tears? All right. And then he turned toward the woman and he said to Simon, do you see this woman? Yeah. I came into your house and you didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and she wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss. You didn't greet me with the whole, you know, peck on each side of the cheek kiss. But this woman, from the time I entered, she's not stopped kissing my feet. And you didn't put oil on my head, but she's put perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. Next. And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. If you have not been forgiven, it's going to be really hard for you to fully grasp what I'm going to talk about tonight. Forgiveness is the greatest experience that anyone can ever experience this side of heaven. I'm telling you that right now. There is nothing that is going to create more of an emotional response from you than forgiveness. It's the most critical, crucial act that can happen to anyone's soul. And Jesus is all about forgiven. It doesn't matter if it's $500 million. Jesus is into forgiving your sin. And we don't know a lot about the scenario. It's kind of weird, isn't it? It's kind of weird. We don't know a lot about the sinful woman. Doesn't even say he knows her name, and we know he's really into names, so I'm kind of assuming here that he doesn't really know her, but she knows him. She knows the aura that's been off of Jesus. She knows what's been penetrating her heart from him. She knows this kind of a man. She knows he's the real deal. She knows he's more than a guy that just says nice things or a guy that does nice things. She knows that there's a love and a source that's right down to the root that she has tapped into, and it has permeated her life. She is affected deeply by it. She can't even fully explain it. You know that she would never go to a Pharisee's house on any given day, but she, knowing that Jesus, the one who is the source of all things, the one that she has been permeated from, the love that's penetrated her heart, is in that house, and she goes in the house of the Pharisee. I don't know if she has to go by some guards. I don't know what she has to do, if she has to sweet talk people or whatever she has to do, but she goes in there, and she awkwardly comes up to Jesus. She can't come to his face. But she comes from behind, and she just starts weeping and wiping his feet with her tears, and with perfume, and with her hair. And I look at that, and I think, this is somebody that has experienced grace, that has experienced forgiveness to the fullest degree. She gets it. And when you feel it, when you feel forgiveness like you're supposed to feel forgiveness, like Jesus came to give you forgiveness, you have an emotional response and you cry. A lot of times, people just can't find, they just don't know why. I'm just crying. She finds herself weeping at Jesus' feet. The other thing is that she ends up pouring out this expensive perfume. Like she's wanting to give everything she's got. It's kind of her identity too, like this perfume, you know? It's like this, maybe it's the symbol of who she's been and what she's poured her money that she's earned over on, and she just pours it out onto Jesus' feet, financially giving back to Jesus. There's emotion there. There's finance there, and there's affection there. She's kissing him. This isn't a sexual thing. She is kissing his feet. And there is something within her that she can't help but show affection. This is deep. And it's something that she felt. I find this to be interesting that Jesus says, can we go back to that slide before? One more back. Yeah, right here. That it says, therefore, at the bottom there, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown, but whoever has been forgiven little loves little. And then the next slide, Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you, go in peace. And it's as if the forgiveness happens before she even has to be known that it's given. Like it just happens. She knows that she owes big time money in a way. And Jesus says it's forgiven. I'm going to tell you right now that the source of the kind of love that Danielle received on this trip, May mission trip, where she said, did you hear? She said it was something that came off these people. She said they weren't trying to get something from her. These are the first people that kind of loved her for her because they had received something from God that was complete forgiveness. And when you've got forgiveness, you turn around and give it. And her last words to you were that very thing. If you receive that gift, turn around and give it, and do it today. This is what it looks like. I got to ask a question back to our first awkward talk. Do you remember? Remember how awkward that was? Is there someone in your life that sees forgiveness in you? They don't know what it. They couldn't articulate that, but there's something that comes off of you that's permeated them, and you don't even maybe even know it. But they're standing around the perimeter of your life awkwardly. Who is that? Well, I got a lot of awkward people in my life. Yeah, I know. We all got them. But there might be somebody that's awkwardly off, knowing that they want more of what they've felt from you. But they don't know how to ask for it. All they know how to do is just kind of hang around. Would you be sensitive to those people this week? Would you be looking for those people this week? To just maybe be one step more intentional with? This is happening. And for a lot of you, you don't even know it's happening. And you've got to be aware, and you've got to have eyes to see all of that. So Kurt stood me up, didn't want to see me because I married him. I get it. Dave said, just keep calling him. Let's just bug him till he comes. No, that's not really putting out the aura I'm looking for. And so that was like in June. And I'm going back up, and Dave has got season tickets to the Michigan State football game. I love Michigan State. And he says, why don't we go to the Michigan State game? I tell you what, we'll surprise the boys. That was his exact words in his email. And I'm like, Kurt and TJ? And he goes, yep. All right. And so I show up to this football game on Saturday. This was just 2 days ago. And it's the first time Michigan State blew anyone out this year. I'm pretty sure it was my fault. So if you're wondering, I think that's true. And I actually ran into our guest speaker for our fall retreat this Friday. He just was walking down the street, and he was like, Pete! And I was like, Aaron, going to see you next weekend. So that's going to be awesome. But anyway, I'm sitting there at this before the game, and I find myself in the middle of a party. Not a birthday party. A party party. Okay? There is plenty of beverages at this party. You know what I'm talking about. And these are all of Kurt, TJ, and Dave's friends from years back, these Michigan State guys. And they're all older now, 36, mid-30s, a little older maybe. They all got kids, and they all got wives, but they all got stories. And they're rolling. I mean, this party is starting to heat up, and here I am. I'm sitting in their house, sitting in their turf at their place, and I'm waiting for Kurt. And Kurt's a little late in showing up, and I see him crossing the street, and he's walking across, and he comes up, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he's like, oh, smoking a cigarette, and I run into Pete Coco. I was like, Kurt, I don't care. Come on over. And see, that statement right there told me what he's expecting from me. That statement right there told me what he's afraid of, what's going to come off of me, what's going to permeate his life. And I know it was just words, and I was afraid, dang, it's just words. But Kurt, I don't care. And then I walked back over to the party, and I sat with him. Sat with him for a few hours. And I listened to his music, and I hung out with his friends, and I even drank some of his beverages. And as time went on, Kurt, I hope, pray, feel like God did something through me being with him, not judging, on his turf, in his conditions, where he felt loved, where he felt forgiveness, where he felt like there is no stones to be thrown. And I end up getting a conversation with TJ going, and TJ just, I mean, out of the blue, he says, Pete, I want you to know something. I love Jesus. I was like, TJ, I believe that. He said, I want you to also know something. My wife doesn't really know Jesus. I think she'd like him, though. I think she'd like him. But I can't find a church that I can go to where I feel like she's going to understand. And I get a chance this week to call TJ back and to say, you know what, TJ? You get to be Jesus. That's an open door. Didn't capitalize on it in that moment, but that's an open door. And I know that we talked about this woman weeping at his feet because there was emotion there. Hey, guys don't cry. I get that. But if I could have looked into TJ's eyes a little bit deeper, I think that there was deep emotion with him. He wants his wife to love Jesus. And that's what he wanted to talk about at the party with me. Dave, he's successful. He sent me a text. I think I'm going to look it up for you real quick. It was the day after. Really liked it. Dave was, I won't lie to you. I mean, one of the reasons I went up to see Dave is because Dave might have some finances that might help this ministry. And he ended up giving a pretty good chunk, a pretty good donation to our ministry this weekend. Kind of like an alabaster jar. And then I asked him, I said, hey, you were a very gracious friend. Thanks for taking care of me this weekend. Thanks for your gift. He said, my pleasure. I want to talk to you, Pete, about significance, accountability, and growing in my faith. You open to that? Yeah. I'm open to that. Kurt and I talked about pain. We talked about divorce. We talked about his potential remarriage. We talked about his kids. And a guy who was afraid to see me just a few hours before, you know what his last words were to me? I want you to go on vacation with me next spring. I'm paying your way. I'll fly you out. Alabaster jar. What permeated out of me was not, I don't want to make myself Jesus here. I'm telling you, Jesus did something to me that made me an open vessel that I think was able to be transferred to other people. And you know, the point of the story here isn't that you need to be like other people so that they just meet with you. Because, you know, that happens all over the place. You just going to a party isn't going to make things happen. You got to have some purity in your life. You got to have some life that is forgiven, that you have an opportunity, and you have to be intentional. And this is what he experienced. I got to experience this firsthand this week, and it feels good. And so tonight, it's really simple. It's really simple. If you've been forgiven, just show that. Share that. Don't be afraid to hide that. And if you've been forgiven, maybe get out of your room. Get out of the routine that you're in. Get out of the circle that you're in. It could have been really easy for me to be like, you know what, those guys are going to be drinking beer. I think I better not go. I'm going to keep myself pure. They don't get any opportunity to see Jesus, and opportunity wasted this weekend. That could have happened. If you are a person that just hasn't really been forgiven, you know about Jesus, you've heard about Jesus, you know that he loves people, and you know he might even love you, but you haven't let him really forgive you. And you might say, you know what? I've got really, really big debt that I owe, and I don't think he can forgive it. $500 billion, if that's where you're at. But I am afraid that some of us in this room, probably more so, are leaning more towards the fact that you think you only owe $50. And that's why you haven't experienced the intense forgiveness that you need to experience. I'm here to tell you, you do owe big money. You do have a debt that you can't pay. And when Jesus turned to Simon and he said, hey, whoever is forgiven the most is the one who's going to love the most. And he's trying to get Simon to understand it. Hey, Pharisee, you think you know. You think you're close to me. You think you followed enough rules that you're just a little bit shy. No, you are way shy. And so are you. So am I. Big time sinner. Big time sinners need big time forgiveness. And when you get big time forgiveness, there's big time things that come off of your life that penetrate other people's lives. And so if we are not all forgiven here tonight, let's just get it right tonight. And we talk up in this place a lot about the way that we respond to Jesus. And we haven't had any people get baptized yet. I think that's about to happen real quick. Right around the corner. Because baptism, just to let you guys know, it's not some act that saves you. It is an opportunity for you to receive grace, for you to receive forgiveness, for you to surrender to the life that you've been trying to lead, and you surrender in the grace of Jesus, and he is the one that ends up taking you where you need to go. And we'll be talking more and more about that, but I'm going to introduce that thought into your head tonight, and I'm going to pray like crazy that you don't sleep. That just kind of wrestles in your brain and in your heart, and you say, you know what? I know I have not surrendered to Jesus and accepted this forgiveness that is 500 trillion that I owe. And let's just get right with Jesus. Let's just let forgiveness reign, and we won't be able to help it come off of our life. And it can start tonight. I like what Danielle said. It can start tonight. It can start this weekend. That's my prayer. Let's stand. I will pray. God, I am so grateful that this whole life that you give to us is not dependent upon us. This grace that people need in our life is not dependent on us being good people. It's dependent on us being forgiven people. And so, God, would you help us to not just accept people for who they are, but to forgive people for what they've done? And that we would accept the forgiveness that you have given to us, and that we would just let that reign within us tonight. And as we sing these last few songs, would you meet us where we're at? Would you maybe point out to us the few things that really are bigger sins than we have ever thought they were? And would you pinpoint those things, forgive those things, and help us to move on from those things so that we can be better lovers of people on this campus this year? It is in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.